Music and talk fix those days and every day on KPFT's HD3 channel, streaming online at kpft.org as well as on HD Radio. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston.
When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. KPFT's vehicle donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and the best charitable tax deduction around. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR to help out now. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites. Tonight.
Technology Bites tonight.
Awkward pauses.
Tonight.
Tonight's show is brought to you by
the letter
Awkward
R.
Pauses.
Just like to take this time to remind everyone that there are thousands of people around the world. That's all.
You know, a long time ago, there were other people, but that was a long time ago.
Tonight's episode, Beyond Thunderdome.
Of all the shows you could be listening to on KPFT, this is certainly one of them.
Is that why Jay is wearing that Tina Turner getup?
Get your hand off my knee, Lee. All right. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
In the studio tonight, Lee Hutchins. Is it Hutchins or Hutchinson?
It's Hutchinson.
It is son.
Hutchinson.
He is the son of a Hutchin.
Yes.
Such a son of a Hutchin. Such a Hutchin.
It was my father's name.
You wear it well.
It was originally Son in Hutch, and then when they came to Ellis Island, he escaped to Ellis Island, and they changed it.
Let's go with yes. Let's go with yes on that. That sounds good.
Special guest.
All right. We are glad you could tune in tonight. It is another exciting episode of Technology Bites. And before we move on too much into technology, I just want to acknowledge the sad fact that today we lost one of the great ones, Little Joe Washington Blues.
Eccentric Houston Blues legend.
Eccentric Blues legend. I mean, this guy, Little Joe, it was amazing. I don't know, just the guy was just amazing. The fact that he could, how well he played guitar, what a personality he was, but it's just, he's like a collection of baling wire and leather.
I mean, he was dreadlocks.
He was just I was 75 years old, and, mm-hmm. you know, just all over the place on a bicycle.
On a bicycle.
So he passed away today, and that's very sad. It's a terrible loss for the music community, especially for us here in Houston. It was, you know, his homegrown one.
Yeah, and, you know, I heard what happened is he was, you know, going down the street and somebody said, "Hey, Little Joe, how are you doing?" He said, "I'm doing pretty good." And then, poof, done. No, I'm kidding. Blues.
Oh, blues.
The blues were holding him up, and then he's like, "Yeah, I know I'm doing pretty good today." Bonk.
I'm pretty happy.
I can't complain.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, I wanted to acknowledge that before we got going, but now on with the show, Technology Bites. We've got a full house here. We're going to be relying heavily on Lee Hutchinson to
no pressure.
to carry that weight.
And take it away, Lee.
Tonight's show.
Yes.
And we've given out the...
We haven't done anything. We've really just kind of been hopping and skipping and jumping around different things. But yeah, let's give out the vital statistics. If you want to learn more about this show, everything you need to know is at geekradio.com. I think I just recently renewed the registration on it. So
don't be like Microsoft and forget.
Did Microsoft forget?
It's been a while.
Is that a story?
Someone else actually stepped in and paid it for them. This was maybe a decade or two.
Okay. So, yeah, we still have geekradio.com, so you can go there and learn.
Haven't lost it yet.
We haven't lost it yet, no.
Well, we've lost it.
There's an Xfinity Wi-Fi that's open and available to be used.
I think it's here. Okay. I think it's part of the Xfinity or something they have in the studio.
It's not me. Really?
So it's not a little box.
I thought it was Barrett.
It's really not me.
It's not Barrett. Okay, yeah. Because
actually, it might be. This is the laptop I had at DEF CON. Let me check this.
Uh-oh.
All right. So you can also join us on IRC, Internet Relay Chat, as they like to call it. And the server is irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And the channel is Tech Bites. So if you want to come in, it's like what Twitter wants to be or could have been. It's IRC. So join in.
It's what Jay uses.
It's the show within a show. It's where you can say what's on your mind. If you want to talk about how you really feel about Ted Cruz and his stance on net neutrality, you can abandon your AOL dial-up account and come right into the channel and give us what for. All right. And also the phone number, which we may or may not use tonight, 713-526-5738.
A what?
We may or may not take calls. Oh. We're just so full of information. There's so much going on.
All right.
We're just so full of...
Yeah, we're so full.
of awkward pauses.
It's the perfect show. The perfect show.
There you go.
I love this colder weather.
Yes.
I can wear pants for more than a couple of days. And yeah. I mean outer pants, not like pants the way British people mean pants.
British pants.
Not British pants.
Those last for weeks.
Well, especially you could turn them inside out 3 times. All right. So
and then you wrap your fish and chips in them.
Ooh, yuck. That's that vinegar sauce.
No! Hell no!
Lee is questioning and second-guessing himself. Now, what did I sign up for?
You went there.
I did. All right, so I guess what we're going to do next is we're going to do... We've got Peter Hughes in the studio, by the way. That's why it's... There's no dog. There's no dogs barking. There's no cutting out.
No falling internet connection.
No doors opening and closing.
Robotic-sounding voices.
No, it's Peter Hughes.
Right here live.
Injected directly into the studio.
Last night I was live at the Verstfest, not performing, just drinking.
Was
but,
it the Verst?
It was the best of times.
It was the first one I've been to lately, but no, the weather, though, was just, it was kind of perfect.
He'll be singing the Verst song here in a little bit.
Is that, what's in his water, what's in the water bottle? Is it water in your water bottle?
Are you carrying water?
Topo Chico.
There's no water in there.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure.
There's no water in there.
Sure it is.
There's no water in there.
It's just
the spoon doesn't bend. Or what is that? There is no spoon.
There's no spoon.
Yeah,
I like that version better. The spoon doesn't bend.
I don't get it.
In the Matrix, the kid when Neo goes in, there's the weird kid who's like got the spoon and it like.
Oh
bends.
Yeah,
there is no spoon.
You need to figure out that it's not the spoon that bends. It's you or something like that.
What does it have to do with smuggling vodka into the studio?
In a Topo
there
Chico
is no spoon.
There is no spoon. Thank you.
All right.
Well, I think one thing we're doing a little, we're making some changes.
Yeah,
I think
we're reevaluating our purpose here. You've given us the wake-up call.
We got to report our report card, and now we're having to
do makeup work.
It said our handwriting needed improvement.
But so I think, so we're not going to have an info shot. Because I don't
what?
Think, not,
what?
I don't,
but
I don't think what? Instead of having a separate deal to just talk about the stories.
But I
and...
have to press the button.
No, see, I think here's the challenge.
Y'all are trying to cut me out.
We need all new bumpers. Get,
I was
going to
say,
new bumpers.
We you know, we're assessing what we're doing, and we'll either go strong into a new direction for Technology Bites, or we'll give up and go back to the old format. But I was thinking, yeah, we should have new bumpers. Knew everything.
Absolutely.
Flick, did you want something to do? You have to do it on your own time, but
and dime. Yeah,
we'll be expecting the outro music to show our new direction tonight.
Hank Williams.
it's the show in black.
I'm pretty sure I can probably find plenty of things to use as a more modern version on the same thing.
I'm looking into the booth and there's like a whole thing of CDs back there. I mean, surely that's all like royalty free stuff.
The entire
right?
studio collection.
It's all of it.
Why do I need that? I've got my entire music collection on my phone.
Entire?
Yeah, I use iTunes Match, and so. Everything that is in my library is uploaded to
the
mythical cloud, which I can then access from my phone.
That's because if you're really hip, you have one vinyl album, and that's your collection.
Well, then we have to pay royalties if you play something.
It's a radio station.
They radio station's paid royalties. Already it pays whatever license we
it
pay.
Pays for itself.
Magic!
Yeah,
what are you, Metallica? This is the Spotify of public radio. Come on, here's your 2 cents.
I know nothing.
Lee Hammett.
That's why you're here.
Yes. Yes.
Lee Hetfield.
Licenses. We downloaded all the music we needed during the times before
Lee
Spotify
Ulrich.
And Pandora.
Yeah, wasn't going to say that. But
what was the?
We done.
Here's a,
we bought
okay.
all the rights from what was the first big music trading?
Napster.
That's what it was. Yeah, we got our license from Napster.
I knew the answer to that, and I knew that couldn't be right because I knew what it was. How is that? You know, speaking of. What was I going to say?
Naps?
No, I was thinking, if we're on the topic of copyright and digital rights to stuff, obviously, you know, commercial music is not free. You have to pay for the songs that you download or listen to in some form or another. Spotify covers the license, you know, for the stuff that they're streaming, or you can buy it from iTunes or you buy it from somewhere. I was wondering about, a lot of times... During football season, my favorite television shows kind of get bumped by 10 to 15 minutes, so my DVR is not smart enough to record when the shows actually start. So if I record one show, I get the end of the football game and half of the show. And then I have to go in and set up to record shows afterwards that I don't really want to watch just so I get all the show. So what are my rights in terms of being able to download that show from the internet? Like, is it is it copyrighted if I download it from, you know, using a torrent to get the show that I could have gotten on broadcast for nothing and skip the commercials anyway?
Slippery slope alert.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question because I think, you know, essentially if you try to torrent it from someplace that they're monitoring and they record that you torrented it, then I would think that technically you're taking it. But having a recording of it on your computer that they don't know where it came from.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. There's what you're doing is you'd be acquiring copyrighted content through a distribution channel that doesn't generate revenue for the rights holder. So whether or not you have actually already paid for the right to do it, that method of acquisition is copyright infringement.
So because, you know, the television station doesn't figure out how to make sure that I – it's not their responsibility to make sure I can DVR their content and skip through the commercials is what you're saying.
Essentially, yes.
Well, it's because movie theaters want me to go see movies for free. I can't just go download it. It's the same kind of thing.
Not necessarily. Let's say you buy a ticket to go see a movie, and then circumstances prevent you from going to see the movie, but you don't get a refund on your ticket.
Uh-huh. So that gives me license to go download it?
That's kind of what.
Oh, I don't like handy cam work. I'd rather wait for the DVD. Right.
Well, you know, you just go and buy. What if you could just go like buy tickets to all these movies that you don't really have time to go see? Just buy the ticket from the theater.
Well, that opens up a whole separate question of distribution. Distribution rights, especially theatrical distribution rights, are big money areas, and the rights to distribute a movie, if we're talking movies specifically, the rights to distribute a movie over the internet are typically separate from the rights to show the film in a theater, right? All of these different methods of distribution are all negotiated separately. So that's why
it's like they're licensing the distribution channels kind of.
Yeah, it's chopped up geographically and it's chopped up by format and method, and everybody in the distribution channels gets to take their piece of the money pie. And if you go and torrent the movie, you're sure, even though you have, in, you know, you finger quotes paid for it already, you haven't paid to receive an electronic copy of that. There is a revenue producing method for them to get you an electronic copy, and you're not following that. So, I mean, it's even stupider than it might look at first glance. It's ridiculous.
Well, could I open up a virtual movie theater?
I think probably if you would be willing to sign and pay enough money to the rights holders, you could probably do whatever you want.
True. If you're willing to. Well, I remember in the early days of the internet when the ISP that I worked for wanted to run a radio station on the, you know, on the, as part of the.
Dang, this was like the Wild Wild West days.
This was the Wild Wild West days. It was.
You just did it.
Huh?
You just did it back then.
Well, you know, being the conscientious copyright aware person that I pretend to be, knew that there were licensing questions that had to come into play, but it wasn't happening much. There was not a lot of digital music content being streamed to the net, so that I wanted to start up a radio station. So I actually contacted the RIAA and different, you know, bodies that control the licensing, ASCAP and all of that.
So you want to be like a radio station, all right. Well, pay us $100,000.
No. See, here's what was weird is, you know, I actually was in a conversation with somebody at ASCAP and said, okay, here's what we want to do, you know, and they looked at the internet service provider and said, you know what? What we want is a percentage of your entire revenue.
Of course, they
shooting
do.
For the moon there.
Well, they want to say, well, you know, based on how many people are, you know, have accounts with your, you know, how much money does you make as an ISP, that this is a value added service of the ISP. So therefore, we want to. They didn't have a price. But they wanted us to open our books up and say, okay, here's how much money we make, and we'll give you 10% or whatever to be able to broadcast your music library over the internet. They didn't see it as a totally separate enterprise. It wasn't going to generate revenue unto itself.
Let's just say it's not the cap that they put in ASCAP.
I got business tips from the mob.
From their perspective, you can kind of see it. They don't want to devalue their product. Their product is worth as much as people will pay for it. It's like the movie studios getting all upset about Redbox and dollar movie rentals.
Well, but if I make detergent that you wash delivery trucks with, I don't sell that to FedEx for a percentage of their profit.
Well, maybe you should. Because that sounds like you would
great
come out
if you,
way
if
ahead
you
in that.
Get it. But it's I'm saying that it's the metaphor.
If
I
people
think
will
holds.
Let you do it,
if you lost money, if the ISP then lost money, would they owe money because you had negative profits?
No,
so
I'm sure.
Well, if you negotiated, you'd have to negotiate like the increased membership or the increased revenues, and then they get a cut of that. Well, in the utopian world, I would think that we could do it like the software registration style, to where like you get a movie, you register with whoever made the movie. They know you have the movie, and wherever you go, if you want to download that movie again, it's yours to get. Maybe they charge you 20 cents for download fee, but the point is they know you bought it. You can destroy the digital copy you have, and they, no matter where you go, you can get that again if you want.
And then
to.
When you're done with the movie, you return it. So somebody else can get the movie because it's kind of like token ring.
Like, but I mean, they need to make up their mind. It's like back when they said you didn't own the CD and you don't really own the data on it either. You know, back when they said no, you can't own either. You could, we need to own something. They need to make up their mind.
You could well the what is it? Ultraviolet, the movie studio movie distribution scheme. Ultraviolet
version of digital.
Yeah, it's sort. No, it's not DivX. It's I think it's ultraviolet.
I don't know what the format is, but it's called
ultraviolet. Well, it's digital. It's a digital format, and it sort of operates on that same fashion. And where it falls down and fails is that
nobody uses it.
Well, nobody uses it for very specific reasons, and that's that. I mean, it works. Like if you want to watch a movie on your computer or on your phone or on, like the three people that have smart TVs that actually use the built-in smart TV stuff, if you want to watch it on those, you can. But if you want to watch it using like VLC player or the media player on your phone that's not the ultraviolet branded player, if you want to watch the movie the way you want to watch the movie, you can't. You have to stick within their
portability has to be there. Like I should be able to watch it on a small player, on the plane, on, you know, wherever I go.
So does it have to,
my device,
does it have to phone home to verify that you have the right to watch the movie?
I know there's a crypto key component. I don't know if it's,
because if that is the case,
not.
It is DivX.
Well, the way that you'll never get the portability. As a technical person, you'll never get the portability you want, because to get that portability would require a lessening of the cryptographic control around the content. To let it play in VLC and QuickTime and Media Player, and to let it play on, you know, however anybody wants to watch their movies,
they've lost
control. They
mandatory
have to,
DRM.
They can't. Yeah, there's no DRM package that will allow consumers the flexibility they want and also constrain the distribution in the way that the movie studios want.
They should give up DRM.
Well, the problem back, you know, part of the weird idea, and, you know, it sounds extra bizarre now, the part of the problem why the rights thing was such a big deal if an ISP wanted to become a radio station was because, remember, you know, if you were old enough and paying attention then, the fantasy of the music business was that now they could get full like royalties for every time a song was ever played. Where with the radio station, it is tracked, but they don't like go in and say, well, you played Tiptoe Through the Tulips 10 times, and, you know, so that's $5 or whatever, you know, so that one you pay 3 cents a time you play it, or per listener, and all whatever other kind of multiplier. Because I think there was also, they had the issue of, you know, even though we put this stuff out on the frequency, and you could tune every single radio device in Houston to our station, and we could play the song once, but we pay for one broadcast of it, regardless of if one person listens to the song or a million, and they couldn't, they still couldn't get their heads around that. The thing I wonder about nowadays, with the model kind of down where you pay for a license and you can broadcast online, what if you set up a radio station, you had an app, and you set up an ISP radio station, and you had every song ever on a disc, and you had each station on your programming platform played that one song. So you have infinite, you know, you have millions of stations. And so basically at any time somebody could tune into that station and get that song started and playing. How is that different? You know, they don't like the on-demand thing, because there have been attempts where you could, like, you know, pick the song and you notice, because any service nowadays, notice there's the thing where it says you can skip so many. You can only skip so many.
Like pure on-demand is too much like music ownership.
But isn't Spotify on-demand if you pay for it?
That's why Taylor Swift doesn't like Spotify.
Well, so did you see the response that the Spotify CEO posted to Taylor Swift's complaints?
Oh, he shouldn't have even addressed that, but...
Because now she's going to write a song about it.
Well, so I thought the guy had, when he laid his points out, in the context that he framed them, I thought he made a really good point, because he basically said, he said kind of what Peter said, that if basically the guy's response was, if Taylor Swift songs got played 10 times on a radio station, she's going to get $0. But if they get streamed 10 times on Spotify, she's going to get, you know, whatever the formula is, you know, three quarters of a penny or whatever. And if Taylor Swift songs get played 1,000 times on the radio, she's going to get $0 from those 1,000 plays. But if you get played 1,000 times on Spotify, it's going to get whatever. I don't know what the Spotify number is. It's not zero, but also not gigantic. I mean, within that constrained context of the argument of, like, plays on Spotify directly translate into dollars for artists, he's not wrong. He's just leaving out all of, like, all of the whole framework of how artists do get paid and labels get paid and all of that, the whole framework that's evolved around contemporary radio that's absent in the internet distribution.
You've got awesome stuff that totally goes kind of like gray market. Like, I don't know if everyone has seen the Taylor, and this is the only Taylor Swift song I listened to, but it's the latest one, but someone's laid it up against a 1980s exercise with spandex gymnastics. What's the word here? Jazzercise video. Have you seen this, anyone? It's a perfect mashup. But that stuff can't exist legally, like the Jay-Z and the Danger Mouse stuff with the Gray album that I thought was great, but because of music ownership and because of the way things get distributed,
although maybe
that can't legally
that one
exist,
might be able to, because they could call it a work of satire or something, maybe.
Really,
I think that if you were going to do that, if you were going to try to make that play, that...
Except it's the whole original song,
maybe if
and they would
Jay-Z,
split video from audio.
If
probably.
You're Jay-Z and you can afford, like, a really big lawyer, you can make that play. But I don't think like, you know, like Peter Hughes Records could go bust
my Jay-Z album, where at the end of each song I match it note for note and through the entire song, and at the end I go, not.
Well, I don't know.
And then it's a parody of Jay-Z.
Maybe you could go see if there's some pro bono
by
lawyers.
Although if you heard me doing Jay-Z,
was because Jay-Z
would be a it would be a parody or tragedy.
I say it's because Jay-Z's song goes dun 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 da da dun dun, and yours goes dun 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 da dun dun. It's totally different. Sorry, it was a Vanilla Ice reference from like the 80s.
Thanks, Ice.
Ice.
What is his real name? What is Vanilla Ice's real name?
Rob Van Winkle.
Van Winkle. So we met a number of years ago. He was in Clear Lake. He was playing at a small show
as
at
Ice?
One of the little clubs. Well, so I asked him. We were there. We knew one of the people who was running the shows, and we got to meet him very briefly. And I shook his hand, and I was like, "Mr. Van Winkle, it's good to meet you." And he's like, "No, call me Ice." Like, cool.
Well, you know,
you can call me Ice, like everybody else does.
He went through a phase where he was like, hated his past and hated that and would never play it.
Oh, he embraced it. He went
hardcore.
The Go Ninja song and
everything.
Okay, see,
because he hated it for a number of years, and then at some point he kind of got past it, and he would actually do
Scouts Bar.
He would do it, but
my wife is texting me. He was playing at Scouts Bar in Clear Lake.
But he would actually do that. I forgot the name of the band, and maybe it was called Ice, but it was like hardcore,
Vanilla
rock.
Ice and the Vanilla Guys.
And, but no, he started doing a cover of it, but as a hardcore song.
Right,
that's funny.
But it took him years to get.
It's kind of like how Leonard Nimoy at first like rebelled against being Spock, and he wrote "I Am Not Spock," and then later he "I Am Spock." Just to kind of wrap that around. Yeah.
All right.
So this is the new format? Is this what we're doing now?
Yes.
I'm gonna play the.
It's a good conversation.
I'm gonna play the intro. For the new format.
Someone
I mean, hooray.
Is this going to comply with FCC regulations?
I don't know.
How is the new format going to benefit from such a retro 8-bit tune? Although it's wonderful.
I'm digging it.
It's loving this.
Is that our new red song?
Down with
Forget
this.
Forget you.
Forget you.
Maybe that should be the outro.
And forget her too.
Anyway.
Maybe if you did a cool mix-up with the or mash-up with the Muppet movie, the chickens doing that, too.
Maybe if you did
you haven't
something...
seen that? You were around children of below the age of 15 or so, right?
It's all frozen.
And you haven't seen the Jason Segel when we basically rebooted the Muppets?
That. No, I haven't seen that.
It's actually decent.
I have seen Frozen a bunch of times, though.
I think that's like the universal constant.
Let it go, Terry.
Ooh.
Sorry.
That's how you can pick out the adult that doesn't have kids. Somebody at my job made a Frozen joke in staff a couple of weeks ago, and everybody laughed, and I was like, I don't get it. They're like, you don't have kids because you haven't seen Frozen. Well,
I'm aware there's a movie called that, and I know there was something called Frozen, and that's all I know.
If you want to understand the whole thing about Frozen...
I really don't.
Google,
this is the new format.
This is for Barrett. if you Google and watch the YouTube video to Let It Go, and then you'll misunderstand the point of that moment in the movie, just like all the little girls who are just, you know, basically she was supposed to be the villainess. It's really in doubt
who?
Whether
Dwight, he was always about DVRing his stuff and don't spoil it.
So both
the princesses die in the end, right?
I haven't seen this yet, guys.
Well, they both die in the end. And
the guy who doesn't see it all. No, but the whole deal, the song has like phrases that somebody could pick up and say, you know, yeah, that's me. Let it go. Don't let people, you know, put you in a box and not be like what you want to be.
So it's basically like the Taylor Swift Shake It Off song, right?
Essentially, yes.
I trapped you into that. You listen to Taylor Swift.
No.
Okay, this format is not working. This is not working.
There's way too much Taylor Swift, I will say that, in this format.
I was driving through.
Taylor Swift was driving through Houston. And
technology
said,
Swift.
The efforts to legitimize Taylor Swift will not find traction here on Technology Bites.
Shake it off.
It's too late. It's way too late.
Should we talk about technology?
Well, the technology that it takes to create a Taylor Swift album is quite fascinating.
I hear it is.
The technology it takes to create a Taylor Swift, actually. No.
Oh, we're going
to
talk about speaking of technology, how about that comet landing?
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little bit upset that I saw pictures of it, which was super cool. So they actually put like a craft down on the surface of a comet, and I think they're going to shoot hooks. Maybe they didn't. But they got no pictures of Bruce Affleck.
Look at what's on his phone.
No, I was going to. I'm Googling for.
Swift all over Barrett's phone.
Yeah, I was Googling for the lyrics of the thing. But I was very upset that there was no Bruce Willis, no Ben Affleck. Pictures of any of the guys that they put up there to go take care of the Armageddon situation.
The probe landed and Aerosmith didn't come out.
We didn't launch Aerosmith to a comet.
No Aerosmith, no Harrison Ford.
Steve Buscemi did not go insane on the asteroid. Apparently it bounced off and it was a bounce landing. And there was some kind of, like Barrett mentioned it, there's some kind of... deals that were supposed to like launch into the
and they said
surface.
They launched originally. They actually said, hey, we launched the harpoons, and I don't think they actually truly fired. That
somebody
might have
shouted
been.
It apparently, but it didn't actually happen. Man the harpoons,
say,
man.
It's something like Moby
Quick,
Dick, right?
Everybody overload the Wi-Fi so we can look this up.
I know they said that when it separated, it's a washing machine actually is what they were sending there. It was a washing machine from my reading.
That was the Soviet attempt.
Were you reading The Onion?
No, it said washing machine size, so I just assume it's a washing machine. Because what else is washing machine size except a washing machine?
Legit to me.
So,
dryers.
What was supposed to happen, it was supposed to hit the surface around 1 meter a second, and to keep it from bouncing off, there was supposed to be a jet that would fire to push it against the surface, I guess. But when it disconnected, they tested that rocket, and it wasn't working or something. And so they were a little worried about that, but they did have a plan to put out legs that would hit and screw into the ground, but it was also like a harpoon kind of thing. But they weren't sure if that was going to work. I haven't heard anything since they supposedly got back a report from the craft that it had landed, but I haven't checked that. That was like four or five pounds.
I haven't looked, but it looks like the craft is tweeting. So, I mean, apparently it's got three times that chance.
That's okay. Awesome.
You guys an hour ago.
I hope it calls out
for the benefit
the Mars
of those
lander.
Who may not yeah. know, let's talk about what's actually happened. So who is the party responsible for this mission?
ESA.
The European Space Administration.
ESA. If you're an insider, you say ESA.
ESA.
Says the American.
And they
we're say,
and
okay,
they launched,
would it be,
this is,
would
this
know
is people the, at NASA. The Rosetta would it be mission. You've probably no, heard it it's referred
ESA.
To as Rosetta.
Trust me.
Yes. To land land on a comet and
watching this in Colorado, you were Rosetta stoned. I know.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. After leaving the mothership Rosetta and descending, Philae, P-H-I-L-A-E, so that you know if I'm not pronouncing it right. Filet Gumbo, the
we'll
Cajun
defer
rocket.
To Lee Hutchinson on all pronunciations.
Filet sounds good.
After leaving the mothership Rosetta Filet and descending, apparently, even though it had been with Rosetta for the 10 years that this has been flying, it could not speak Comet and did not attach. But
so
that's a Rosetta
it
joke.
It hadn't used the Rosetta Stone.
Anyways, no, it apparently may have bounced rather than gently settled. This is according to CNN. On the surface of the comet, ESA scientists said at a news conference, Comet 67P has a very weak gravity, so they had anchoring harpoons designed to shoot into the comet to fix it to the surface. Those failed to fire, and it is not firmly secure. So, in other words, it's just sort of riding along, and as long as nothing disturbs it, I guess, because it could just drift away. Like probably people listening to the show tonight. So we've got an analogy. We've got our harpoons, unless our harpoons have gotten into your mind.
Like John Mayer's drifted away from Taylor Swift. That's what I was Googling. I'm sorry.
No, somebody posted.
I think it was worth it.
Somebody tweeted a really cool size comparison chart of Comet 67P versus a bunch of stuff from Star Trek. So here's Comet 67P compared to the size of
hold
Deep Space
Nine. Hold the microphone
up
to that picture,
please. Yeah, let me hold the mic to the picture. Compared to, here's a Galaxy-class starship compared to Comet 67P. Actually, we have IRC. I can paste
Comet
this.
67P is the size of the palm of your hand, and then
it's like
Space Nine would be your thumb.
So
I was
going to
say,
at,
what about sizes that non-nerds would understand?
No, there's none
Deep
of that.
Space Nine bigger than a baby's arm.
So if you look at, like, the Federation Space Dock from Star Trek 4. And so
not Star Trek 3.
Star Trek 4.
Now, was that completely
different?
Star Trek
3, too, was the same one as Star Trek 3. Star Trek 3 in the beginning of 4, and or the end of 4. The end of 4. Man, sorry, it's been a while. And then, I guess in 6, they had it in 6, too. Anyway, so it's bigger than that, right? And it's bigger than a Borg cube, and it's bigger than Deep Space Nine.
Some people might say perhaps 7 kilometers.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Why do you have to go and introduce?
So you'd have to have 1.5
Oh, math.
Runs. 5K
and measurements.
Runs to go around.
What were we going to say, Barrett?
I was going to say a lot of people would argue, though, that comparing the Star Trek to the Star Wars universe is inaccurate because the Star Wars universe is supposed to be minuscule in comparison to the Star Trek universe.
What?
I read this a while ago. There have been, this was fought about like 10 or 12 years ago. Maybe I'm not up on the thing. Maybe it's flipped. But the idea was there was a big debate going and people were saying like, okay, let's have Star Trek fight Star Wars. What would happen? And then someone came around with a proof that said actually the entire Star Wars universe would fit like in a little bitty molecule inside the Star Trek universe. So
that's pretty dorky.
It's not going to happen.
That's way dorky.
It's like in a water drop of all that.
This
you know?
Is this could only be decided.
Like Data sneezes and somewhere in there is the Star Wars universe.
This could only be decided by a couple of fans, one from each franchise,
Finnegan's
fighting it out with plastic lightsabers.
But how would they
phasers.
Fight? No, because you couldn't use lightsabers. Oh, one of them could use the sword,
Bat-leth,
the Klingon sword. Yeah, yeah, and the other
we'd
one could use a
wrists
you could use a lightsaber,
park, and they dance around each other.
All right, what were we talking about?
The comet.
Well, one of the things that I noticed in the social aspects of this major scientific achievement is, you know, one thing you don't see happening so much when I read the discourse about different things on Facebook and Twitter and social media and so forth, I really have enjoyed how people have been saying we as the human race have done this. You know, since this wasn't really an American.
It was the Europeans.
It was
the Europeans, yes.
And then I got to thinking, and this will bring us to the next topic, but it got me thinking, you know, somebody was mentioning that, you know, this is the kind of space exploration that's going to be required for mankind to survive, mm-hmm. you know, millions of years from now when we have to leave this planet. And we will eventually, if the human race survives long enough, we'll have to find another home.
That would be in the year 2525.
Just say hundreds, if not millions. Maybe thousands, if we're lucky.
But then it got me thinking about immigration. Because, you know, what if...
there's going to be like an international border police going, nope.
There's going to be the Ted Cruz of international space wanting to build a border.
The rest of the universe definitely would want us to stay here. And when they
play that record we put in Voyager 1, we may have a lot of... don't
drive through the Arizona Nebula.
You know, the porous borders have allowed these humans to kind of creep in and steal our intergalactic jobs.
What the glorp is this? There is no Taylor Swift on here.
Leave the Taylor Swift. You go now. But speaking of Ted Cruz, net neutrality.
Yeah, there's the other big thing that's happening technology-wise now. I guess tough thing with net neutrality, I think, for a lot of people is understanding what net neutrality means.
Yeah, it's kind of a – It's a terrible term. It is a terrible term.
There's also been a lot of flip-flop.
Based on each side, the definition makes it more complicated because net neutrality sort of implies that you leave things alone and let them go on whatever course neutrally, just let them go on whatever course, where actually net neutrality does involve some regulation. But on the flip side, the people who are saying, you know, who are against it, saying that is just like excessive regulation and that it will ruin your internet, that, you know, your internet is wonderful now and it'll just totally ruin it and everybody will lose their jobs and all that kind of stuff, is just as kind of misleading and overblown. I'll give a shot at it and then hopefully somebody will say, no, here's a better definition. But net neutrality is the idea that the traffic through the internet, because just to give a little background, when you go to a web page or when you download a Netflix movie, then you click that link and the command, you know, the signal goes out from your computer across your internet service provider's network, then out to the broader internet, the backbones, and then ends up and through maybe multiple different networks, but ends up at Netflix or at, you know, www.google.com, and then makes a request, you know, send me that web page, send me that movie.
Independently owned.
And then that data comes back to you. Like a movie, obviously the request is tiny. The movie you get back, there's a lot of data comes back. Network neutrality would be a rule that all the data from all the different places, all the different destinations,
no matter what kind of things being
requested, is treated equally. That there's no... Basically, that none is given a fast lane or a slow lane, you know, sped up, you know, given a better path to you or a lesser path to you when you receive it back. And you kind of, you know, that sounds esoteric. It's like, well, my network at home is not very fast. Well, how does that matter? The idea, the Netflix is the best example because, again, it's large files. Netflix has been getting throttled, as many of you may have noticed. If you were on Comcast or Verizon, it is documented and has been measured by third parties that are trustworthy that when negotiations started with Netflix, that the bandwidth allocated to Netflix on the networks of like Comcast, where the customers are on Verizon and Comcast, that bandwidth was throttled. And so you get the buffering...
It would slow down your traffic more or less. Only Netflix traffic going to Comcast customers.
And that's perfectly legal under the current environment. And net neutrality would say, no, you can't slow that down. And the thing that you know, you can decide philosophically how you feel about it is that you paid for the bandwidth to your house. You paid Comcast so that you could go on the internet. You didn't pay them so that maybe some sites you could get to and others you could have trouble with. And the other thing is, the other question I guess you have to answer is, do they have the right to charge Netflix to have access to you?
Well, it's even more complicated than that because in looking at Netflix and their discussions with Verizon and Comcast as a pocket example, one of the sticking points that Comcast specifically wanted was they wanted to be able to charge Netflix, not just for the usage of the, not just to have the connection, but to use the connection. So it's the equivalent of like, you know, you pay your $100 a month to get the line run to your house, but you keep paying that $100 a month and you've got the line, but then for every single like time you use the line, you have to pay for that too. The argument from Comcast essentially was that, and not just Comcast, the other companies, is that these companies, these Netflixes, these businesses, they're making money using our connections. Well, we want some of that because they can't make their money without us. And you're like, well, but they're already paying to use your connection. Well, but they should pay more.
They're making more.
I'm paying to use their connection to get to them. They're looking at the road to the customer. And it really should be looking at the
part of the problem, though, is when you look at it, when you look at it from a consumer level, all you see is I've got a pipe to the internet and I've got X amount of bandwidth and I have it maybe infinite amount of data in a month. I don't have any limits, right? So I should be able to watch whatever I can want that I can fill this pipe up with. So that's the perspective of some people. But when you get into the level of actually the ISPs, the backbones, they actually are negotiating the amount of data that they agree that will be transferred between each other, and then
it's
for
peering.
A certain amount
You're
per price is peering,
peering. Yeah.
and then when you go above that amount, you have to pay a different rate.
Well,
it's
even more complicated than that because it's a really good point when you look through the wire, the internet. The modern internet is basically a connection of networks. It is an inter-networked network of networks.
That are all independent.
Shared, and privately owned. Everyone maintains their own little
parts. More than anything else, there's a couple of really great YouTube videos on this. More than anything else, the internet is a collection of agreements to utilize common protocols on different networks to communicate and connect endpoints. All of these big – Comcast has a big network that's theirs. AT&T, Level 3 Communications – I don't know all there's a relatively small number of very large network operators. And generally the way it works is if you, a smaller network operator, want to send traffic through a bigger network operator's network, you pay them a peerage fee. If you want to send through another very large network operator, if you're a tier one operator and you want to send through another tier one operator, you generally do it for free with the expectation that they also need to send through you, and it's just sort of a quid pro quo thing. But there is this absolutely Byzantine structure of peering agreements that govern who pays what for data at the network level. It is ludicrously complicated. So one of the big like net neutrality things, one of the issues comes when you look at a company like Comcast that is potentially in a direct business competition situation with Netflix, because Comcast, in addition to... So Netflix doesn't own the pipes. Netflix has the content. They need to use Comcast's pipes to send the data, to send the movies to you, so that when it's 8 o'clock on a Friday, you can watch House of Cards in 1080p without it buffering, because if it buffers, that's like you want to strangle somebody. It's 2014. Why is my internet buffering? Mm-hmm. Well, the danger is that these media conglomerate companies are becoming so large and so octopus-like. Comcast potentially doesn't just own the pipes, they own content also. And it might be in their best interest. They might decide to start up their own movie streaming service. And they might decide that they'd like your $7 a month. And while they're at it, Netflix is going to go slowly and not really go all that fast to your house. But
that's
our streaming
one of the large fears that
is
has led
go
to it.
Way
led,
faster.
Led and, to yeah, the idea of but, net neutrality.
And
was
unfortunately,
there are people that are in direct competition who own the pipes.
It's like a protectionist racket. It'd be a shame if something would happen to your data that you got there. Why don't you pay us and make it work better?
If we don't
better?
Have things, you know, already complicated enough, and this is why there's no, like, easy sum up, and anybody who does sum it up, oh, it's like Obamacare for the internet, is lying to you. So I'll just say that.
That's what right. I was going to say. It is like Obamacare.
That statement was incredibly bad. And do you know what the problem is with that statement? I'll let you go, but...
You Taylor Swift it in.
That was an incredibly... Wow. It did.
Now,
that was an incredibly ignorant and idiotic statement on Ted Cruz's part. And I know, I mean, you love him or hate him, Ted Cruz is not an idiot.
Well, Oatmeal called him out, I think, and whether or not there was any truth behind that, that was pretty good. I think the issue is, and that this is just, if you look at the history of the internet, we go back to the 60s, we go back to the 70s, it was university, it was people that had cool ideas that wanted to share it. They were innovators. So, you know, like 23 universities, U of H was in there on the first round.
No security.
Berkeley, no security.
Constructed
things were open.
That way, so that it was easy to share.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. And the protocols were set up to move information. And then what happened, sometime along the way, it went from university and government control over to the private entities, and money really got involved.
A blame
so, yeah, and what's happened is we've all become very reliant upon, you know, packets, upon getting information to and from. And 20 years ago, that wasn't the deal. We were the nerds. No one knew what we were talking about. But now everyone, they get all jittery if they can't get on Facebook or what have you. So I think that broadband is getting to the point where, I don't want to say it's like water, but it's almost the point where, you know, if the water utilities come in or water companies come in and they want to have like some competition things and starve other companies out, the government says, no, you can't do that because people need water. We're going to put controls in place. Uh-huh. And when this first net neutrality thing came around, I would be like, no. Don't touch the packets. Let it work itself out. But there's so much greed, and there's so many people wanting to get paid on so many different levels, and it's slowing down a resource that needs to get to people.
That's
I think maybe we do have a little bit of regulation. Maybe we say, hey, I don't care how you guys work it out, but water will get to the people, and it will get to the people at a reasonable price and
can
be clean.
Can you on the phone with Comcast customer service or with UVerse customer service for 4 hours and then have them, you know, make a service appointment with you where the guy is going to come from between noon and 8 o'clock on Thursday next week and your internet's out until then. Can you honestly engage with a company that does that and then also trust that company to make decisions that are going to be in your best interest with how they manage their network?
Without some sort of regulation.
Without regulation? The answer is, if you think the answer is yes, then you need to probably, like, wait till your cable modem breaks and call in and try to get it fixed.
Because the other layer to this, you know, that kind of dovetails with the utility piece is, here's a quick mental exercise for you, and I guarantee that the vast majority of you will not have more than one choice. If you want to get high-speed broadband, so I think that would be like 30 megabits per second or faster.
I think that's the definition right now, yeah.
For high speed, how many providers do you have available? And what I would say is that the vast majority of you have one, Comcast or perhaps UVerse, if that's who's covering you. A small number of you have both because they overlap in your area. And if you zoom out to the United States, you can color it in like a patchwork quilt, and it's big, solid blocks of
the large ones,
the big providers offering that. And they are the ones who want to charge. And so it's one of these things where deciding what a monopoly is also sort of depends how far zoomed in you are. Looking at the United States, you go, well, look at this patchwork quilt of all these different
it
places.
It looks like they've decided
providers.
To stay out of people's way, though. It looks like the companies have said, like, hey, we're going to have this city, you have this city, to where locally there is no choice. Even though geographically, like Pete said, it looks like, sure, it's tons of choice, but you go down to your city and no, you're strapped with one choice if you want to.
So no competition. So there's no market work. If there's no competition, there's no market working. And so then the extortion works. You know, the extortion only works if you don't have another choice. You know, if the deal is, all right, if you take this road to go to your job, you have to pay me $100 or bad things will happen and you won't get to work, or it'll take you 10 extra hours. Well, if somebody's got a road a block away that says, hey, I'll do it for a nickel.
Well, but building
then
roads
that's gonna,
is expensive.
Then that would work.
Google Fiber.
Well, I'm just talking
so about
though, if there's competition.
I know.
And if roads are expensive, then what happens is they say, yeah, you know, I'm going to charge this outrageous amount for you to get to work.
That's the contrarian
position. And you can
position.
Just wait until somebody builds another network to compete with me.
The contrarian position is, if you'll allow me to put on the devil's advocate hat, you know, if company
it's got
X,
bright red horns
if
it's, and the goatee, please.
If company X, you know, if Comcast, if AT&T, if Cox, if you know Verizon, whoever has invested literally billions of dollars to construct these networks, why can't they manage them as they see fit? I mean, the modern internet depends upon cooperation between networks, and to a certain extent, they always will. And the issue isn't that, like, they're going to make it impossible to send email. It's not anything like that. What's the argument against allowing them to manage
it? I think the thing, you know, talking about the peering, and I know it gets into complicated stuff, Netflix is not a provider of bandwidth. right?
Right.
So Netflix gets on the internet through somebody themselves. They pay some big – one of these big companies, they pay them to get their content onto the internet. And that company peers with these other big companies.
Yeah, in fact, with
just
Netflix,
like everybody else.
Netflix, generally, they've got it where you can, you being an ISP, you can pay them and they'll drop like a rack in your data center with their content pre-staged on it so they don't have to peer. But in any case, they're like they have to still get it to
but,
you.
But so essentially, though, what the then that to my point, my looking at that, though, is doesn't that mean then that when you change the rules and go, yeah, we're going to do peering plus. We're doing peering plus because you got this extra traffic that you're making money off of. And so now your traffic, that packet, because it came from it, because it came from your ISP, but it also came from Netflix, that's a special
well, the,
extra
the thing
dollar
is a lot
packet.
Of the peering agreements well,
they're very
if,
opaque.
If they,
most of
if,
them are totally
if
opaque.
The peering agreement is hey, you know, we're just peered, and then one side says, wow, look, you know, y'all sent 2 terabytes of data, and we sent 2 meg of data. I'm not sure about this peering agreement anymore because, you know, we're getting screwed on this.
Well, and it's and so that's a lot of these peering arrangements happen at physical locations called NAPs, network access points. And there are several throughout the world. There are a few of them in the U.S., and these are literally places where all of these network providers have, like, there'll be a big building, and these network providers will have cages in the buildings, and there will be, like, they'll have their big, gigantic, you know, $10 million Cisco Nexus router, and then they'll be right next to it, the other company's big $10 million Cisco Nexus router, and they'll have all these 10 gig Ethernet ports, and they'll run, like, the cable, like, out of the cage into the other guy's cage. Cable,
a quick aside out of the other guy's cage, into is the other guy's if cage. There's a zombie apocalypse, you want to be inside one of the NAPs.
So, and these, you know, these 10 gig Ethernet ports or these 40 gig Ethernet ports or whatever, they're very, very expensive. These are, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per port. And the way that ISPs will budget their peering connections is they'll do it on, like, the number of ports engaged. And, oh, I hear music. Anyway, so a lot of these times, they'll say, this port's full and we don't want to add another port to give us more capacity unless you pay us more. And that where like that's directly where it ties in with the money.
The middlemen are thugs, is what it comes down to. It's like ASCAP but with packets.
Let's all just be
they want money
hippies.
On both sides.
ASCAP packets.
ASCAP packets.
All right. Well, that music in the background tells us that we're coming up to the top of the hour, in which time we have to take a small break.
And
bring you some station business. If you have heard anything in the conversation that has occurred here in the last hour that you'd like to weigh in on, we invite you to call during the second half of the show at 713-526-5738. We'd like to know your thoughts on net neutrality or the landing on the comet. Or
if you have a question, as long as that question is, what's net neutrality again? Can you explain
talk about Taylor Smith, too, if you want.
Taylor Smith?
Taylor Smith.
Yeah, whatever. Swift.
All right.
Nice cover up.
Swift one.
We're on to you.
I don't know anything about Taylor Swift.
You're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Inflicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groove House.
And Lee himself will
is
all,
here.
We will be
Lee
back
Swift.
After these messages.
The A&W Academic Academy is hosting a holiday food, toy, and clothes drive sponsored by the Houston Food Bank and the Salvation Army Angel Tree Program. The drive is now through January 4th. The community will be able to drop off canned goods, toys, coats, and blankets at 2 locations, 14520 Picton, Houston, Texas, 77036, and 5802 Tidwell, Houston, Texas, 77016. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Donations of food, toys, clothing, and blankets will benefit the hungry and the homeless children and adults in our area. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. KPFT.org online.
The earth is still. El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Now back to whatever this thing is.
This thing would be Technology Bites. This thing. All right. So, you know, we tuned into a little bit of Taylor Swift, and that was good.
And I think one of the things that you can see from this is I don't think that we got too deeply geeky, but when you deal with issues of technology, and the thing about this is your grandma who has, you know, who watches Netflix and Hulu, or who, you know, has anybody who has an internet connection at their house, there is some level that you need to understand this so that you can make decisions, and so that you can you need to have an opinion on this, because political people have opinions on it, except they also have donations from large companies who want to make a lot of money off of charging again to Netflix, if you know, or charging for not having net neutrality and being able to, you know, because one of the things is, from going back to what Lee was saying, if you add another port, that has a cost. There's a fixed cost to that.
There's a real cost. Bytes don't have a cost.
Except I would bet you that adding the extra ports for Netflix. Well, I know that Netflix has volunteered to pay for adding.
Well,
those
Netflix
extra ports.
Also has created a hugely inproportionate amount of new traffic.
They're the majority of the U.S. traffic now. If you look at just pure packets,
but
it's mainly Netflix traffic.
I guess the thing that's interesting to me is why is the idea that there should be a new method of dealing with that when peering was already in place? I mean, to be sort of conservative, small c conservative about it, shouldn't the system that we already were using and that was already working have the mechanisms for dealing with?
Well, yes, but Netflix was making a lot of money.
Yeah,
Radio station thing. Yeah. Oh, we've got songs and you want to make money off it. Well, we just want a percentage of your business. And it seems to me as absurd to hear that today from somebody who's providing bandwidth. That's kind of like if the water company said, "Oh, you have a car wash."
Well, that's like
protection money.
It's protection
money.
You're like, "Well, no, I'm paying for the phone companies.
The phone companies, that's the thing is, the phone companies, like the cell companies specifically, have been used to not being a pipe, right? They provide the phone, you buy the phone from them, they control the content, they put all their stuff on it. Like, they control a lot of things. They send you to their stores or whatever.
You pay per minute.
Like everything is controlled through them. And there's been this progression through time of where a lot of people's mindset is, no, you just provide the pipe to the internet, and that's it. You're just a dumb pipe. And these companies haven't been dumb pipes, and they're looking at it like, but if we're just a dumb pipe, we're going to lose all this other money we were making on the side doing all these other things. And so I think part of it's a fight by those companies because they don't want to become – which the backbones basically were just dumb pipes, like the real – like the big top-level backbones they were. But
sure.
Comcast and Time Warner, they weren't. And so I think their fear is that they're going to get cut out of a lot of money they could be making.
Well, sure. You never want to lose
Although
your
the funny part
identity.
About that is, to phrase it a different way, for a politician who's about business and letting the market compete – letting them use the leverage of one business providing pipes to the internet to support or enhance some other really unrelated business that you're doing over that same network is the definition of not letting the market function, because basically you say, no, I'm creating this new market that's only Comcast viewers or Comcast internet subscribers, and they will only be allowed to get Comcast Cares video and Comcast Cares sound.
Or you can,
because
no,
we're
no,
not
no.
going to compete with
it won't
or
be like
they
that
have to pay.
It'll be like this. It'll be you have 100 gigabytes of regular internet per month that you can use. But if you watch Comcast movie streaming service, that comes out of your, not out of your 100
your
minutes.
Unlimited
that
Comcast.
Comes out of your unlimited Uber Comcast one. And we
that
keep
comes
saying,
out of your I Love Comcast.
We keep saying
account.
Comcast. I don't want to call them out unfairly. Sorry, it's like right. they're just one of a large field of bad operators in this.
It, you know, there is, and there's the analog on many cell phone plans. I got a marketing thing from a major cell phone provider that said, you know, if you're listening to music using the LTE on your phone, if you sign up with our service, we don't count it against your bandwidth limits.
Yeah.
So a very similar thing.
It's not just a similar thing. That's an exact – that is – that's the issue we're talking
about. On that,
about.
I guess, you know, it, and maybe not to split hairs, the, I think there is a difference between them deciding they're going to give away that bandwidth that has a cost to them for you to use that service. There is sort of there's two sides to that transaction, as opposed to when they close out another competitor that could offer a similar thing to you, and actually try to charge them and indirectly charge you, because if Netflix pays more money to do their service, at some point the consumer, the idea is at some point they'll raise their prices.
I think they
and
should
the consumer
have.
Consumer will pay for.
I think
the...
that Netflix should raise its streaming prices and should run a big ad campaign and be like, "We are raising our streaming prices because Verizon, Comcast, Level 3, AT&T, da-da-da, are charging us more to carry data to you."
Well, or put a surcharge, which is your charge will be this because you're on Comcast. We had to pay them X amount
to
do this.
Totally explain
it. So you pay the Comcast tax.
Throw it back at the consumer. And here's the – I mean
– but the problem is, though, when they get that, their choice is to basically do what?
Yeah, during the negotiations, they actually – didn't they put out saying like, hey, you're getting a slow connection because Comcast is throttling, because Verizon's doing this. And
Verizon and Comcast responded and they were like, no, they're lying.
You run the risk with that idea of the bill becoming too complicated, because if you take a look – for example, take a look at your phone bill, your cellular phone bill.
Yeah.
I looked at my phone bill and it made me just ill because, you know, they tell you what you pay for your connection fee and for your data plan. But then you go through and you see the bill comes out. Those numbers don't add up plus tax. You go and you see additional fees because of regulatory blah, 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 and you have to pay these extra fees, and that number changes month to month. So the telcos are happy to pass those costs on to the consumer and say, look, you know, because of government regulation or we have to pay these, we're going to charge that back to you and do that. So – And but people don't really look at their cell phone bill and take that into consideration. So all that information is there, but it's overwhelming amount of information. People just look at the bottom line. What is the cost to deliver this service to me? So that's what people want to see. And I agree, it'd be nice if we could call out all the operators to say, you know, you're paying extra because of this, but people don't care. They just want to know what the bottom line is.
And so we've been sitting here talking about this like 40 minutes, something
yeah.
like that. Whereas the opposition, the people who are against net neutrality, the people who are being, you know, receiving campaign contributions, they don't have to talk for 45 minutes to sum up their argument. They've got brilliant campaign strategists and PR, and they can spit out pithy one-line prevarications like, net neutrality is like Obamacare for the internet, which is
a lie.
It clicks.
But it goes to his constituency, right? Because people who like Obama, like Obamacare, they're gonna
Obama
be like, well, that's cool because I like Obamacare.
Yeah, it doesn't communicate anything meaningful. It doesn't provide any information. It grossly misrepresents distorts and misrepresents what net neutrality is.
Well,
it
doesn't even matter what it is, right? I mean, you could put anything in there that somebody doesn't like. You know, it's like you could market it to kids and be like, Net neutrality is like the Brussels sprouts of the internet.
Oh, well,
it doesn't matter what you put in
hell
there.
With that.
Net neutrality is double plus bad for you 1984 readers.
No, double plus ungood.
Oh, double plus ungood. So
we have always been at war with net neutrality.
Well, one of the things I think, hopefully, in people listening to it, making your decision, some of giving all this explanation is so that you can kind of make your own decision and come down on whatever side. We certainly have our opinions, and I think probably it's been fairly clear. I would guess that mostly if you poll the geeks about it, they would say net neutrality is they would be in favor of net neutrality.
It's because it's a really complicated issue, but if you take the time to unwind it, you realize that being pro net neutrality is being pro the way the internet is supposed to be and has always been.
Has been, yeah. So they're trying, so net neutrality, maintaining net neutrality, it's continuing as we were and making that codified. So
making that the norm,
the legal structure. Instead mm-hmm. of leaving it open for somebody to change that for money.
Well, I think that's the thing is the fear that is that some people who are still kind of idealist from the old internet saw some companies starting to either do it or talk about doing it or the possibility of it being done. And yeah, they didn't like the idea of it because it flew against how they viewed the internet should work. The idea. Because some people, you know, kind of have this idea is that the internet's kind of the great liberator. Anybody can set up a blog, and it can get popular, and somebody can have a voice that would never have had a voice before. And there, you know, and some people think that's an important aspect of the internet is that it, you know, makes everybody equal to some degree.
Until you read the comments sections.
Well,
but the problem is that if they talk about abusing the concept of non-net neutrality, is that people could kind of force fringe voices off where people wouldn't be able to get to them or see them, or it would be so slow that it wouldn't be worthwhile. And so the people controlling the network, if it's not a neutral path, then they could sway what could get to the consumer.
Right. Exactly.
I think that would be the honest and sort of single line or two sentence explanation of, you know, why you should be for net neutrality as opposed to, you know, it being Obamacare against it because it's Obamacare for the internet. I think that the thing that what I would boil it down to is who do you want to control the access that you have to content on the internet? If your answer is nobody but you, then you want net neutrality. If it's some corporation that you aren't sure which corporation, but they control what access you can have to particular content on the internet based on what company you choose to get your internet service through, then you should be against net neutrality.
But also, to me, like I started having a conversation with someone online about this recently, and it their position was very libertarian, I guess, view. And so it kind of fell into the whether it's do you trust government or do you trust corporation or who do you trust least, I guess, you know, who do you trust? Because their view sort of is like the free market will solve it.
But I think that's demonstrably untrue. That is provably untrue because Netflix has already been held and forced to pay extortion fees by Verizon and Comcast. It's already happened. We're not talking about a theoretical situation where, like, well, if we back off and this might be the bad. It's already happened.
Market can solve simple problems. I think this is too complex for market forces just to work things out.
Well, I guess in a sense, when I say, you know, look at the conservative, how did we resolve it before? Because Facebook had massive amounts of traffic, right? They went from nothing to having massive amounts of traffic. Obviously, the thing with Netflix is you're talking about it's exponentially larger because of videos. YouTube, massive amounts of traffic. The system worked. There was a system in place. It worked. The money, the legitimate cost in the way that it was negotiated before was followed and it continued, you know, the service continued and it was available. What the people who want to charge extra are wanting to go beyond the system that already existed. They're wanting to change the rules in the middle of the game, and so the idea is, oh, well, you're being successful, so suddenly your water that you're putting into the pipes is more expensive water. You know, it's not like we're not like mainlining Perrier or something through the water system and people are paying extra because they're getting that on the other end. It's all again, I guess that gets back to the pipes argument. But the peering agreements, yes, they're Byzantine, but they were there and they were working right up until people decided not to make them work and to make them not work for the purposes of extorting money from somebody else, which is kind of, you know, again, it's like if you took a certain street to your work every day and then suddenly some guy steps up and goes, yeah, and you know what? I own this street and you're not allowed to take it. You know, you're not allowed to take it anymore.
A bridge under,
it's like,
yeah.
But I paid to build this street, or I pay my fees and all
good.
That. But
now,
well, now you got to pay extra.
Pay more.
Actually, no, you don't have to pay extra. Your office where you're trying to get to, your destination needs to pay us. And it's like, what?
But they might
make a lot of money.
They might turn around and make you pay more eventually. Just be aware of that.
But I think the idea is that they could pick your pocket and you wouldn't know it. Because what would happen? Netflix price goes up. Darn that Netflix! I have to pay $2 more a month.
All right,
and then they make the money.
Groovehouse, I see that you have a call on the line.
Yes.
So we're gonna take this call. We're gonna give out the phone number 713-526-5738. All right. Let's see what he has to say.
All right. Up first on the show, we're gonna speak with Cesar.
Cesar.
Cesar, on the air.
Hey, how are y'all?
Good. What can we do for you?
I listen to your show religiously, but concerning net neutrality, if anyone wants to know how it works, just take a look at the cable and satellite companies. Whenever they have a dispute with one of their channels or one of the parent companies of the channels, they just black it out, and you can't watch it on that system. So getting rid of net neutrality, you know, what's to stop one of them from cutting off your favorite website because they can't afford to pay more?
Nothing.
True. One of the things I would say is on the show thing, when there's that negotiation, it's actually like a negotiation between equals, because if you're getting your TV entertainment from one of these providers, most of the time you have an alternative. There actually are competitors on the TV front in a way that you don't have on the internet front. So if that channel isn't there, they risk
your
you going
to watch one channel for one day.
But they run the risk if they lose that channel that they will have customers who go to a competitor. But if they don't let you access a broadband service, if they don't let you access Netflix, to use the biggest example, you don't really have any place else to go to get that Netflix from except them in most neighborhoods, you know, the given provider. But it is a good analogy. I see where you're, you know, the thing about it is that there's more leverage. The consumer has a lot more leverage because there is at least closer to actual competition on what channels are on a given provider, and they have to go back and forth because obviously the channel provider needs to make money, the cable, you know, the media provider needs to make money, and they need to come to something in the middle where they both feel like they can survive. And on this Netflix one, it seems more like they're trying to give Netflix a haircut. They're trying to – anybody who's successful enough to use bandwidth, they're trying to get a little extra something-something from them.
Isn't it more to the point that Netflix is also and Comcast are both content providers, that that maybe this is not so much about how much bandwidth Netflix uses on their pipe, but the fact that they're delivering alternative content – so that I could conceivably subscribe to Netflix, use Comcast, not subscribe to their on-demand service or utilize any of that because I'm getting my movies from Netflix. So there's a bit of a conflict of interest there as well, I think.
You're very correct. Comcast is both a provider and a content creator. So that conflict of interest is very, very real.
Right. It's not like there's a separate thing that says, okay, Comcast is going to say, I'm going to just charge for the amount of packets that are going across. If Netflix sends more packets across my network, they're going to pay more money for that straight up. that makes sense, because we had that same conversation when I worked in the ISP business. You know, if we had somebody who was going to use their dial-up connection the way the average person used a dial-up connection, we charged them a certain amount of money. But if somebody else wanted to come along and get a dial-up connection but leave it on 24/7 and saturate the pipe with content, that they were going to pay a premium for that.
That's what they're saying Netflix is doing.
Right.
Netflix is saturating the pipe. That didn't used to be. So Netflix needs to pay up.
Well, yes, Netflix is being accused of saturating their NAP interconnects. That's what it comes down to.
Although a lot of the slowdown is that normally there would be a negotiation and they would open more ports.
Well, I want to make sure we don't just completely dismiss the caller. Did you have anything else you wanted to add? Are you still there?
No, he may be taking his own nap.
No, he's there.
Yes, sir.
Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
That was pretty much it. I mean, you made my point beautifully.
All right. Well, thanks for your call tonight. We appreciate you being a part of the show.
Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thank you. All right.
So maybe should we sort of sum this one up,
yes.
I think?
I think, to me, the internet is not neutral. It likes cats. That's my final stance.
Well, you know, I mean, one last point on that. And I think the concern from, you know, the freedom of speech and the equal voice aspect is that once a company is allowed to say, you know, this packet takes preference over that packet.
And our packets take the most preference, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, the fact that anything isn't completely neutral.
Right.
Completely equal.
Would mean that, you know, so if Comcast decides to take a stance, and again, they're not singling out Comcast, but that's like the best reference point. We're sorry, Comcast, but, you know, do better. If Comcast decides because just like any other business owner, they could decide what content they agree with and what content they don't agree with. And there's not a lot of transparency there to see why, and we go back to the conflict of interest. So maybe the guy who's running Comcast or the board that's running Comcast decides that Breitbart.com is the greatest website in the world, and we're just going to throttle behind the scenes any other websites with contrary points of view.
Yeah.
How do you even know whether they're doing it? Because if you go online and you go to seek information from a particular site, whether it's Netflix or CNN or whatever, you should be allowed to get that content and have it delivered as a consumer at the speed any other content comes to you at. That just should be a given. And so the fight, I think, comes down to whether or not Netflix should pay for a premium to be able to use that much, or whether that cost should be passed on to the consumer for consuming that particular content.
Yeah, I agree pretty much with that. I think I would modify it just slightly, which is, I think that there's a distinction between negotiating for bandwidth and negotiating for what you use that bandwidth to do. Because I think that the difference is, normally if you are doing a peering agreement, who that content's coming from should be irrelevant. It's I'm big cable, I'm a big backbone company, and I want to hook into your network. Well, how much data do you think you're going to send through? X amount. Well, we don't send much through you. Here's the costs. That kind of negotiation, that seems to me to be honest and clean. When you go, oh, well, wait, you're doing content for this company that's got a lot of money, so I'm going to try to change the market to what it'll bear. It's like the packets don't identify as they're not more expensive. Somebody else, what about, you know, that major provider that Netflix uses, and I don't know who it is or I would say it, whoever they go through, Netflix gets prioritized, but does somebody else, if I have my server on that network, on that backbone, do I get prioritized? Probably not. They probably are going to do things so that Netflix, so that the ones that pay in particular get through and get the priority. And so it seems to me they're making a false distinction to make money, and that they're adding an element to the negotiations that should be ignored. Because the easiest way to make sure that it's all fair, because nobody wants, I certainly wouldn't, it would be unfair if the deal is I make this big company that I'm going to, you know, send petabytes of data through a connection, and I go peer up with some poor sap and we make some kind of flat deal. It's like, I'm going to give you $100 and I can put however much data I want, slam that through your network, whatever I can squeeze through. Well, then they would have every right to come back and say, hey, you know, you've saturated everything we've got, and we can't do our business. We have to charge you more so we can improve. That makes sense.
The thing
but
is,
doing
it's,
the deal,
it's not
you're
really...
making money at this, so I'm gonna find. I'm gonna get you in particular company to
but
pay.
But it's not really. It's even now. It's not really treated as a pure like commodity with a fixed price. I mean, because a lot of these companies negotiate with each other. It's kind of like going to buy a car. Like, you know, they may have some certain price for the car, but then you go and you negotiate, and it's the slow month, and so you get a much better deal.
Do you use car and you go in the same sentence? Oh,
well, I guess I wonder why. I guess maybe it'd be the problem is that you can't Netflix couldn't easily like distribute their stuff so that they're on multiple networks. Because if they were coming through all the major backbones, then how in the world would Comcast ever figure out who to throttle?
I'd like to throttle Comcast.
Another thing that's interesting to me, and of course this thing is this doesn't solve the problem for like a Comcast or a Time Warner, somebody who sells to end users. But there's a lot of stuff now like Netflix and a lot of the big like video providers and stuff all use caching systems that are all over the world so that they don't actually all go back to one data center or a few big data centers. Like Konami's a big... Or sorry, Akamai.
Yeah, CDNs.
Akamai's a big content cacher, and they cache it locally, so it doesn't have to go across the backbone. You know, the thousandth time somebody wants to watch some, you know, romantic comedy, it's already local, so it doesn't go over that. So they use less, but that does, like I said, it doesn't solve the problem for Comcast because they still have to get that last mile to everybody. You know, every person.
Until you do the Konami code.
So I guess to close this up, I think all of us are supportive of the idea of network neutrality, at least at this point
except
in time.
Except maybe this caller.
All right, except for maybe this caller.
Except maybe okay, this caller.
I don't know.
I guess we'll hear what they have to say and then just... Then
we'll have this one call. You know, if somebody was to call in and interject something else, you know, that is relevant to the conversation...
Get us all riled up again.
Talking about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Taylor Swift, not net neutrality. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
Up next, Tim.
Tim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
There are those who call him
yes,
Tim.
Sir, I am absolutely clueless pretty much as to what all of this is about.
But, yeah, I don't know if he did that great of a job.
I told the person I talked to initially that I'm rather ungeekified. I have no idea. All I know, it's kind of like your telephone. It's kind of like, you know, you get in your car and you expect it to go. You know, you turn on the computer or, you know, I don't because I rarely do it. But my daughter does, my wife does, and it's just there. And it does its job, but I don't know who controls it.
Well, I guess there is that aspect of the whole thing for the average consumer who is consuming internet content. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, you want the bottom line. I'm going to pay this amount of money and I'm going to get this thing called the internet. The internet is a series of tubes, as we all know.
with a bunch of cats.
The idea behind net neutrality in the simplest terms is that you as the consumer, at least those who believe that net neutrality should be the law of the land, they believe that you as the consumer should have equal access to all content on the internet, and that should be made possible by the people that are delivering that content. And behind the scenes, you know, companies like Comcast and AT&T have to negotiate with companies like Netflix and YouTube to determine how that is going to come down the internet pipe to your PC. And that's okay. Net neutrality says that if you go to YouTube or Netflix, that should have, you know, that they should not have to pay any more to deliver that content to you than Hulu or another company that might be delivering content. So you have all the choices available to you as the consumer. And there should be no preferential treatment on the behalf of the provider like Comcast or AT&T in delivering that content.
And to put on my telco hat, when that happens and all those thousands of people are watching Honey Boo Boo, then the 911 center goes offline because we can't control quality of service.
Well, I mean, just like the plain old POTS system does have military codes and does have some government overrides to where if you do have to get traffic through, they can do that. And that's, I would assume that if we got legislation,
yeah,
Honey Boo Boo couldn't mess anything up more than she already has.
A good analogy, I think a good analogy for network neutrality is when you sign up with a phone provider, you don't expect that they are going to intentionally affect the quality of your call based on what phone number you dial.
Or, like, not let calls from Virginia come through.
Although that could be a good service. Like, I'm not going to let you dial your ex after.
I understand the basics of this. What my real question is who truly, I mean, the Internet is not owned by anyone, is it? Is it controlled by a single entity? Is it a government-run thing that someone sets things?
That's a good question.
I never have understood that. I think this animal came out of the cage, and it got bigger than anybody could control.
The genie came out of the bottle. Well, let's let Lee give his highly technical...
The best way to explain it, Tim, is the Internet as we know it, which encompasses a whole bunch of different services, but it's basically a connection of a bunch of different networks owned by a bunch of different large companies across the world. And each company owns their own chunk of it. They own, like, the physical equipment, and they own the network address space, which that's probably you don't know or care about. But the Internet is a bunch of different networks owned by a bunch of different companies that have all agreed to exchange information using a common set of protocols, using a common set of communications methods. So we know that whether you're going to a website that ultimately is, you know, running on computers owned by a company, or you're going to a website that's hosted by some guy in Russia, or you're going to a website like Facebook, you know, doesn't matter where you're going, all of the information is accessible to you because it's all encoded in a specific way, and it's all done in a common set of methods. So it's a collection of connected networks.
Right? And the way it behaves, to make a very simple analogy, it's kind of like the Olympic torch getting across the country. It gets handed off across through different people, take it across,
yeah,
and each one is responsible for it for their section of the journey.
See, I was also going to say, like, maybe from like a, you know, 50,000-foot view, it's sort of like any kind of alliance or organization like NATO or any kind of agreement where there's separate countries or whatever, but they kind of all have agreements that they're going to work together to do something. And in this case, it's computer networks that are all hooked together that agree that they're going to transfer data to each other. Maybe it's a little less hostile than the world in general. You know, there's a little more agreement. There is more friendship amongst it, but there's still arguments and there's still stuff. But in general, you know, people communicate with each other and trade data over.
Well, yeah. And in the early days of this, you would have a computer network that was at point A, and you'd have a computer network that was at point B, and there was no real connection between those networks and, say, you as the computer user. You actually had to initially either dial directly into that network, and like a la BBSs and so forth. But once they started getting connected together, they still had to get connected to the home, to the consumer.
The last mile.
Last mile thing. So it was figured out by people way geekier than me that you could do this over phone lines. The telcos didn't really have much of an idea about this. They just knew that people were using their phone service to
staying on their phone a lot longer than they used to.
Yes, and they were dialing in to get access. And the phone companies, the telcos all kind of went, hey, now, this is interesting. We could make some money off of this. And I watched all the smaller mom-and-pop ISPs get kind of squeezed out by the telcos who had the money to play.
Yeah, there was a shift, and right about the time Jay Lee was talking about this, and this is probably what Al Gore takes some credit for, is the Internet became commercialized. It started out in the early 60s again.
Well, he was
academia.
Like the head of the department.
Yeah, in government. It was an out branch of
deregulated
DOD and DARPA. and then it came out, like IRC came out of DARPA. You know, a lot of this came out from, you know, communication networks that you could not destroy by taking out one single part of it. And then, like Jay Lee said, there was a shift at some point where, you know,
95, I think, was when the internet deregulated.
Yeah, yeah, where you had, like,
suddenly
the telephone.
Where you could sell things and make money on the internet, which before you couldn't. You had to use it for education. So, yeah, it was pretty much government, education, and companies that worked with government and education.
Go ahead, Tim.
It's a big commercial venture that is going to just continue to be a big snafu.
Yes and no. Think of it as not just a commercial venture. Think of it as a cooperation between a number of very, very large companies that own the infrastructure that make their own money off of letting others use it. I mean, the internet is no. It's not a thing. It's more of an agreement more than anything else. I know that's kind of a crappy answer, but it's a hard question to answer because it's a really complicated question. But what it comes down to is the internet. When you ask what is the internet, it's a big collection of different networks that all interoperate together. It is an inter-network of networks that speak the same computer language so that we can pass information around.
And it is also a big snafu, Tim.
Well,
although I think you know
what snafu is.
Yes, we do. Yes,
we're not going to say it, but we're just going to all agree.
All fouled up.
If you want,
we'll let it go.
Yes,
we one that everybody.
Thank you for humoring me. You know, like I say, my wife, my daughter, take care of all the stuff that has to happen in that area of life. In my world, every now and then I Google something just because I can.
Yes. And isn't it nice that you can do that?
I'm grateful.
Yes. No, I appreciate the question. I think that every now and then it's good to kind of like go down and look at this from like the everyman's point of view.
You got
to
pull us back.
Yeah. So we appreciate the call and thank you for participating in the show tonight.
And by the way, I won't say I religiously listen to you, but I have been listening to you since you've been on.
Well, thank you very much for that. And no refunds. Have a good night.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, actually, in the course of talking to that caller, I thought about something that's one that everybody – that was complicated and there was all kinds of talk about it a few years ago. And maybe we should – you know, this is one I think somebody should float just because I would want to see AT&T and Comcast go pale and go, what? Which is, remember when we deregulated the electricity business in Texas and around the country? What did we do? We separated the wires from what you deliver over them. So
that's
the electricity isn't...
That's in the Title II stuff that they're looking at potentially doing is doing exactly that.
They're going to have to.
And so a lot of people understand that one. You know, the idea is Comcast owns the wires and what's going through them, and they're trying to charge the electric company that does solar more than they charge the other electric company that they know somebody at or the company that's making money. So
all right.
I think maybe that may have gotten it a lot closer to a lot of people understood the electricity deregulation thing, or maybe they didn't.
Maybe.
Which also caused such spectacular failures as Reliant Energy deciding to get into the
internet business.
Yes, well.
Let's get out of this thing where we can't own the wires.
All right. 713-526-5738. We are also accepting calls about landing on a comet.
We have a call.
Gnomes.
We have a call right now.
I know we have a call, but I'm fishing for additional calls to come
callers?
In after
Gnomes.
I would just like to point out that both the guy who ran Silk Road and the guy who ran Silk Road 2 were both from Texas originally.
Did you see? Mm. Did you
and
see
they paid
that?
No extra
did you
for
see
their
the
internet.
We just wrote this up. The FBI.
Hang on, caller.
Hold on.
Lee's having a moment.
I'm freaking out, man. What was it? The FBI's most wanted cyber criminal guy. This is this. Hold on, let me pull the story up here if our Wi-Fi works. This guy who was arrested in 2012 for hacking.
What's his name?
For hacking into Stratfor. This fellow named Jeremy Hammond was on the FBI's most wanted cyber criminal list. So it's come out in a report that he like one of the ways like after he was. After he was arrested, the FBI was able to break into his decrypted computer. And it turns out the FBI was able to decrypt his computer and break into it, not necessarily because they have incredibly skilled forensic super hackers, which I'm sure they do, but because the password that Hammond had put on his encrypted laptop was the name of his cat with a couple of numbers after it. The password was Chewy123. And so,
crap, I have to change
never
my password.
Name your cat after a Wookiee. That's the lesson we should all learn here.
It makes the lesson if you're going to, you know, be on the FBI's most wanted cyber criminal list. You
should update your passwords. Use
more than just the name of your cat and a couple of letters.
Or name your cat after like an Aztec god.
I named my cat QXZ1PQ2482-1.
I'm sorry, you said Silk Road, and that reminded me of this thing from today. Okay, sorry.
All right, 713-526-5738, Groove House. Hello, Groove House.
Hi, Jay.
Who do we have up?
Up next, it's Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, it is so hard to keep my talking point listening to you guys.
We have a hard time keeping our talking points.
We're all over the place. I don't know what I'm again.
I like whoever brought up the electricity grid in Texas. That
was Peter Hughes.
Peter, yeah.
But, he wins.
One talking point I've not heard about with net neutrality is that I think the correlation between what they're discussing and the fact that America has a systematic, you know, pattern of not investing in infrastructure to bring it up to the 21st century. I don't think we'd be having such a problem with this discussion if we invested more in data infrastructure and just infrastructure in general for the entire nation.
That makes sense. I know that I would be a lot less inclined to gripe about this kind of net neutrality stuff if I was getting, you know, gigabit to home, to my house, and generally America wasn't such a backwater as far as broadband is.
And it doesn't look like the broadband companies are doing much, but I looked at some of the numbers on what the wireless companies are spending on R&D, and that they're betting, like, in 10 years that there's going to be so many different devices, number of devices online wirelessly, and that everything's going to be using more bandwidth than they're using to now. I bet it. You know, well, all the fiber, all the cable
becomes Michael's
smooth
point,
and it
though,
goes
right? This
goes
is Michael's
wireless.
Point. This is not government-driven. This is not public funds-driven broadband build-out. This is corporate broadband build-out where it's convenient for those interests to do so.
It has been proven over decades and decades that the one thing that will push more investment or will push scientific research the most is government funding, unfortunately, because if you're a private company, who's to say that you're going to have the motive to do that if you can't turn a profit from it?
The cell companies definitely for a number of years just set back and just raked in money for more and more people until their infrastructure was so horribly falling apart that they had to. But then when they did it, they spun it about how much money they were spending on their infrastructure and how expensive it was and how they were going to have to raise rates.
Well, they didn't say they raised the rates. They didn't really say, like, hey, guys, we're having to pay for the last 15 years where we did no build out. We did nothing.
But, you know, then they rush. You know, you see Google bought dark fiber when it was cheap.
They're building out in Austin.
And then when they're building out in a place like Austin, suddenly Time Warner and AT&T have the wherewithal to go to gigabit because there's a competition.
Or they just go and bribe state politicians and say, you need to outlaw municipal broadband.
Yeah, there was a big fight out and, you know, like having fiber on the poles and all kinds of stuff in Austin. It was all pushed by the big providers that were already entrenched there. You know, follow the money on that.
I think approaching it from the political standpoint will not really push this issue forward at all from anyone's standpoint. You know, I mean, it's so filled with money and, you know, friendly elected FCC chairmen, and, you know, it's not going to be pretty once it goes down, I don't think.
You know,
somebody's
going to
be
unhappy.
You talk about the FCC chairman. I have to say that, you know, I was as nervous as anybody else when Wheeler was appointed. You know, Wheeler, the current FCC chairman, being a former, you know,
lawyer for Comcast.
Yeah, former telecom lobbyist. And he's made some questionable decisions, but at the same time, he also is pressing, I think, a lot harder than anybody expected on issues like net neutrality and, you know, public utility or internet being classified as a public utility. He's doing, I think, a better job, just in my personal opinion, than I would have given him credit for a couple of years ago when this all started.
Well, I mean, is that because of public pressure? Or is that because of, what would you say that was because of, though?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, maybe it's because he's in an appointee position and he's no longer, you know, no longer representing special interests, that he's able to follow his conscience potentially and do what, at least again, in my opinion, is the obvious right thing that any idiot could see. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I like the infrastructure point too, just because right now I'm talking to y'all, I'm sitting on 45, just stuck in traffic, and every time in Houston, I mean, everyone knows this, every time we talk about traffic congestion, the only solution that we seem to be able to come up with is add another lane, you know, and it's not working. We need to get, you know, alternatives to everything from traffic to data transmission. And so I think you're going to see some big companies like Google or Apple. I'm probably not Apple because they just hoard all their money. But someone like Google or someone who likes to be on the cutting edge of technology, someone's going to come up with some really interesting technology, I think, from this debate of the net neutrality.
Absolutely. I hope so. Excellent point. Break the mold.
But I'm going to let y'all guys talk. It's good talking to y'all. Thanks for bringing up the point. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for your call.
All right.
Well, we do have, but before this call, there's a few just sort of quick hits to work in. One is there was an event that I had seen, and I tried to send it around, and I think I finally found the link. If you like the kind of geek gathering thing, and you're on, say, the north side of town, there's Friday night show and tech open house at Proto Makerspace. Proto Makerspace sounds like a kind of place that
like
many of our
Matrix.
Listeners might be interested in.
Was that the prequel to Alien?
Where are we going, Neo?
Basically
we
says,
have to go
bring,
to the Proto Makerspace.
Bring your latest tech toys, meet others who enjoy tinkering, or if you have no idea what the Makerspace is about, come and check it out. They're always glad to give a tour of the place. They're in Spring. It's 22820 I-45 Suite 2D in Spring. I'm sure if you Google Proto Makerspace,
I was going to say, because I'm totally going to remember that.
Then you can find it. I mean, they're on Meetup. I got a Meetup notice on it, and you know, you can go and find more information. Since it's sort of geek gathering esque and makery, I figured people would like that. Another just quickie, not to sidetrack our discussions. There were some Windows patches that have come out. There was a bug in Windows that affects every version since Windows 95. So you guys who are sitting there with your old machine that you love to keep running and you think you're safe and okay, I believe that Microsoft actually put out patches to fix some of these problems that have been there that long.
So it's like shell shock. That's been going around. Like the shell shock bug was in Bash since like the late 80s, and this is cropping up. This is, you know, almost old enough to vote. It's old enough to vote, almost old enough to drink.
It allows attackers to remotely execute code on an affected system just by convincing Windows users to visit a URL in Internet Explorer. Period. No other special stuff you have to do. So if you got a patch or if you got a download for Tuesday, you want to install that one. That's very
important.
Critical.
Important to note, this patch has been, there is a patch for it. It is out. You just have to go install it now.
so don't drag your feet on that one, even on your old machines that you think are so old that they don't need it. And then a last one on the kind of quick hit of exploits.
This one's scary.
There was the USB problem, the unpatchable security flaw in USB devices. Well, you know, we should all panic because every single device is affected. Well, you can cut your panic in half for a second, and it'll come back in a minute. apparently, it only
hooray,
affects...
Ouch.
Yeah, you can cut it in half. Hooray. But... Because they found out that only half of the things you plug into USB port have the flaw.
But it's quantum USB.
The bad news is it's nearly impossible to sort out which gadgets are secure against this bug and which ones are insecure without physically opening the drive. So sorry about that bad news, but. At least we're going to keep an eye on it. They call it
Schrodinger's
the guy
USB.
Who came up with it calls it bad USB.
Bad USB.
It's
no
Obamacare
cookie.
For USB. Karsten,
it's Obamacare for USB.
So you know, wanted to
Groovehouse
get
gets credit for the joke.
You get those kind of security things in, so we know that you heard them.
You're forced right. to buy another USB.
Separate from the FTDI stuff, right? So do you guys hear about like the fake FTDI chips, which are the
yes.
USB drivers, USB to serial drivers coming out? One company, the company's called FTDI, they're a Scottish company, they own the rights to everything. So if you have a USB to anything converter, you've got an FTDI chip in there. They found out that Chinese manufacturers were cloning these chips, distributing the chips, so they got with Microsoft and issued a driver that would brick this FTDI chip if you applied the updates.
Yep.
So more or less, if you bought like a little mouse and it happened to have a gray market FTDI chip in there, the next time you did a Windows update, it would brick your mouse.
And
so
you would have really no way of knowing.
And you've got no way of knowing. Same kind of thing here,
because
you really
fault.
Don't know. You would have to, and I saw like, you know, pictures of the real FTDI chips and the fake ones, and they were a couple little telltale things, but same thing. You'd have to pry it open, see, make some guesses, and yeah, it comes down to you just really, really don't know. But luckily, pressure caved. FTDI said, hey, we're not going to like hurt these consumers because they had no idea. We need to go after the Chinese manufacturers, and they stopped doing that. But it's getting to the point where you really don't know anything anymore. I feel like we're kind of like everything's broken. The internet's broken.
It is broken.
USB's which broken.
Speaking of something being broken, I think we had a call with somebody who has something broken.
Uh-oh.
Oh, didn't we used to do this?
We did.
This is like going back in time, kind of. This is weird.
Is it? Because we're so entrenched in our new format.
We're so far ahead in the new format.
We have always been in this format.
No, it seems like we've been talking about net neutrality forever. You guys feel that way?
That old show is dead to me.
All right.
So we're going to, you know, we've been trying a new format tonight where we're having people, you know, call in about what we're talking about. We'll see. There's a lot of good stuff to talk about this week. Certainly the net neutrality subject has been a big one. But we've got a call here who is going to fight the convention and ask us a computer question. So we're going to see how that goes.
Okay.
Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, it's Ed.
Ed, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I apologize in advance for asking such a dull, boring, mundane question based on what you've been talking about, which has been interesting, but I kind of needed to...
But it doesn't solve your problem.
Yeah. Okay, I've got my MacBook backed up from Time Machine onto a hard drive. I'm going to put it on a totally new machine.
Okay.
How does... And it's got a legal copy of Excel, Word, PowerPoint on the old machine. Are those going to be copied okay onto the new machine, and will my license still be okay?
Yes, but you will have to enter it.
That's right. Yes, they will be copied. As long as you choose applications, when you're doing your Time Machine restore, it'll ask you document. Do you want to restore your documents? Do you want to restore your settings? Do you want to store your applications? You have to say yes to applications, mm-hmm. And then the first time you start up, I think it's any one of them. The first time you start up Word or Excel or Outlook or PowerPoint, you'll be prompted to re-enter your Office 2011 key, which you will have to do. Other than that, though, everything will be fine.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you for your call, and vote
back
net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
That's right. Well, that was easy.
It was a Mac question. It was a backup question. You know, I respect anybody who's backing up their computers. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely. Well, and knowing what you need to do when you're moving from one machine to another and asking the question instead of just...
We're not
going to
forget our roots.
Asking before versus asking after. That's always the plus.
Yeah, ask me and call me like, I just did this restore and I have absolutely no idea what happened. Yeah.
I think that call was planned.
Dun, dun,
I think
dun.
Somebody set us up a softball.
Dun, dun, dun.
to see if they could reel us back into answering computer questions directly. Well, we only have a few minutes left, but so maybe talk about new things.
GNOME.
There's that one.
Yeah, we got a couple of things we can talk about to wrap up the show.
I don't know if that's much of a conversation.
Well,
I just thought it was really interesting.
Groupon caved.
Yeah.
Groupon
cave.
Caved. Yeah. And it took them, it sounded like from what GNOME said, that this had been going on in the background for at least a month or two,
so
maybe
30
a full
second
month.
Layout,
yeah,
happened,
Groupon had
quick
like
summary.
Groupon
they
had been,
prototypes. They had everything.
Well,
it sounds
like they had been talking to GNOME and saying we want to do this, and GNOME
and
then had been
about?
Discussing things, and then GNOME said,
"Oh, let's clarify the point first. So,
yeah,
I don't think we CC'd
GNOME
all the listeners on the email.
GNOME
yeah.
is a Linux desktop.
Right,
it's been around for a long time.
GNOME has been around for a long time.
It's kind of a graphical
Windows
interface,
manager, yeah.
On top of it, it's on top of very popular, very widespread Unix boxes like Linux, Red Hat Linux, and SUSE Linux, and things like that. It's
Ubuntu up until recently,
and it's prided itself on its open sourceness and freeness, you know, and how it's a flag.
These
for...
people give away software. The only thing they ask is don't steal our name. That's really all they ask.
So it's a flag for free and open internet.
GNU
network.
Or
it's just GNOME.
Software.
Well, it's from, but it's from GNU.
Okay,
GNU.
So that being said, along comes this mega $1 billion company called Groupon, who makes their money off of making money off the internet. And they created a they wanted to create a product, and they wanted to oh, by the way, we should mention that GNOME is a registered mark. It is a registered mark. They own the copyright to that, or the trademark of the GNOME.
When you
the,
say
the,
they,
the GNOME Foundation.
GNOME.
Yeah, the GNOME Foundation. So Groupon came along and said, we want to create a product called GNOME,
it's
which
a,
is software.
A proprietary point-of-sale device,
right.
I think.
And we want to infringe on the mark that GNOME owns. And GNOME said, now, wait a minute. And GNOME actually, there was actually a page set up for raising money for the legal, because they had to go in, there's like, they, Groupon had
submitted like 20,
8 to 10.
24. No, they submitted like 24.
Right, but 8 to 10 of them were ones that they wanted to contest.
But yeah, GNOME wanted to contest, I think, 10 of them to start off with.
And it was going to cost a certain amount of money to contest each one. So they started fundraising, which actually looked like it was doing pretty well.
I know the last time I'd gone to the site, they had over $60,000. They were trying to get $80,000.
You know, they made a lot because if you went to Groupon, you could buy a coupon that would double your...
$30,000 in legal fees.
So the thing
right
is,
now,
to me,
only...
it sounded like from what they said that this conversation had been going on for a while, and finally GNOME said, you know what, this isn't really going like we want it to. We're going to have to legally fight this. So they went public with it. And as soon as they went public, it was the same day or maybe
the
next day, Groupon said, oh, no, just a second. We really love open source developers and open source. So
we've stolen most of our content from them.
We're in a conversation, so we really want to talk about this. And then maybe a few hours went by, and then they said, you know what, we're going to change the name.
Yeah, they totally flipped.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Next week we'll tell you all about Groupon Windows.
They're going to call it Chevy.
The good guys won on this one, and I think Groupon realized that the court of public opinion was not going to side with them on this, and that it was going to be a public relations nightmare for them to do this. Although they probably could have ridden it out with their billions and billions
of dollars. They
could
have, but I think the people decide versus the attorneys and the dollars decide, which is nice to see happen, especially for GNU, because they couldn't
have,
it would have been hard to fight it.
Sorry to bring up a new topic, but just to definitely make sure we cover this before the end of the show, and we probably should have done it at the beginning, and I'll take responsibility. We're preempted next week.
That's a good point.
I would have been all here by myself.
And so there will be for the Pacific Archive fundraiser, which is a cool thing, and you can listen to that, and they'll have interesting stuff for it. But you won't be hearing people talk about net neutrality or any of the other stuff.
Is Thanksgiving next week or is that the week after?
That's the week after.
So we'll be back with y'all before Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving Eve, we will keep our traditional vigil with you.
Bring turkey.
Turkey vigil.
You'll have turkey on the radio and you'll wake up to turkey in the oven.
Tryptophan will be the new Taylor Swift.
We have turkey or we have like tofurkey and turduckins.
Turduckins.
And on the cool new stuff front, since we're at the very end, just a couple quick hits. I don't know that there's much to talk about with them. I'm leaving the one that might have stuff to talk about for last. The rumors are getting stronger about a big iPad Pro, a 12.9-inch, from more places. And it's not just one leak being reported at five outlets. It's some of them that are ones that I follow more. So it seems to be popping up from more places. So we'll keep an eye on that one. And then the last one, this just you can file it under random weird geekery. I'm a like bag geek, but the only thing that I think is cooler, and I'll show the guys the picture, but I can't show you over the radio. The only thing that would be cooler than a cool ass bag is
a lab coat.
You know, there's the Scott Eves people have, and why you would have thought they'd already had this out for a long time, but they have just released. They now have a lab coat with 16 pockets.
It took them 12 years.
Somebody called in a couple of months ago about how to carry their iPad around the hospital.
That doctor.
Yeah.
And now he can wear a lab coat. The problem with this product is I can't figure out a way to need to wear a lab coat so that I can use it and carry 16 things without walking around looking like a freak.
All right. Well, listen, we're out of time. We got to get out of here, make way for the next show. You have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Thanks for hanging out with us, Lee Hutchinson from Ars Technica.
Adios, guys.
See you next 2 weeks.
as I sit thinking about every man.
KPFT is hosting a celebration of the history and preservation efforts of the Pacifica Radio Archives on Tuesday and Wednesday, November 18th and 19th. We will pause from our regular programming to feature some of the best recordings saved by the archives. KPFT's award-winning DJ Rourke Smith will be a part of this nationwide broadcast. You can also tune in for Kara Anderson and Dwayne Bradley hosting an hour of this national special. Again, KPFT steps away from our schedule on Tuesday and Wednesday, November 18th and 19th, as we celebrate the work of the Pacifica Radio Archives. But never fear, you can still get your music and talk fix those days and every day on KPFT's HD3 channel, streaming online at kpft.org as well as on HD Radio. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and do something great for your community. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 855-KPFT-CAR. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you have come to rely on for music, news and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 855-KPFT-CAR. That's 855-573-5150.